You're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome, Niners, to another episode of The Orb, our dedicated Deep Space Nine podcast. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me as always, today in his solid form, is Matthew Rushing. Matthew, how's the solid world treating you today?
You know, it's okay. I kind of miss the gelatinous state, personally. It's just so free and feels so nice, just to kind of stretch all the way out and it just feels really good, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it does, but you're having your bucket cleaned tonight, as I understand. So while that's going on, you and I are going to talk about Odo. So we talked about what we would do in the beginning of The Orb, and we thought it might be a good idea just to hit the main cast members and talk about their backgrounds, talk about their arcs, and what we think about them. And we've done Sisko, we've done Bashir in depth, and so today we're going to talk about the station's shapeshifter.
Yes, and I really do enjoy Odo as a character. I think he's really interesting, really well done. One of the things that made Odo so interesting was that, Michael Piller had talked about while creating the show, you always need that outside character, the one that can kind of comment back to us about humanity. And so in the vein of Spock or Data, on Deep Space Nine, they wanted that same character. And so for them, they felt like Odo was going to be that character. Chris, how do you feel like that they did with that? How do you think Odo kind of fulfilled that role?
I think it was kind of clear in the beginning, especially in the first season, and even into the second season, that that's what they were doing with the character at times. You know, there was a lot of commentary being delivered by Odo about the humans and about Starfleet. One that I remember in particular is in Necessary Evil, where he has been asked by Starfleet to record these security logs. And, you know, he talks about why he doesn't see that it's necessary, but, you know, humans like to collect records of things. And throughout that episode, as he records his logs, he makes more and more comments about humanity in that way from an outside perspective. And you see that a lot of comments that he makes, like to Quark, for example, in the first season, you know, he'll make comments like, I never understood the humanoid need to collect wealth and valuables. So that's not the exact quote, but something along those lines. As the series went on, though, I feel like it became a better approach to using him as an outsider, and that's what we'll talk about quite a bit today. Instead of just delivering those lines, flat-out statements from an outsider looking in at humans, he became a character who, through his actions and through his struggles, portrayed a lot of the conflicts, I think, that we ourselves feel about being human. And for me, you know, that connected with me a lot more than the kind of the formulaic, here's an outsider, let's throw him in there and let him talk about humanity.
Yeah, I like how you put that, because I think that instead of just being a character who would kind of either make fun of us for how we act as humanoids or any of those kind of things, he really becomes that character who portrays what it means to be human by becoming more human. But not in the same way that Data did, but, you know, Odo's really in that search of identity. Who is he? What is his place in the universe? And so those are the kind of questions that Odo has to ask of himself. And those are the same exact questions that every humanoid has to ask of themselves. He just doesn't have necessarily been raised in a place that made him pursue wealth or, you know, knowledge in the same way that, you know, a human might, you know. So he hasn't had that kind of cultural upbringing in any way, shape, or form. So he's very raw as a character and can be formed then over the seven seasons that we see him, which makes him the character almost the blankest slate when we come to him, I think. And then his life and who he is and his identity really gets filled as we move on through the series.
Right. You know, he does have some similarities to Spock in the sense that he's a character who was raised in one culture and has to adapt to a new culture that he finds himself in. Although Spock has chosen to put himself into a new culture, whereas Odo really had no choice. You know, he found himself in this alien culture. And we'll talk about that a little bit more as well. And then in the sense of Data, he has a similarity in that Data also originally doesn't know where he came from. I mean, there's the story, you know, of how the Starfleet officers found him and they reassembled him and all, but he doesn't really know his origins and why he was created and such. So there are some similarities there. And I agree with Michael Piller that you need a character like that on the show. I think it's important in science fiction in general, you know, in SF literature, especially, science fiction is a vehicle for talking about ourselves in a way that we can't necessarily do openly. But if we put aliens into the story, if we set it on another world, you know, we can talk about issues that might be a little bit touchy or controversial. And on a show like Star Trek, where you have a lot of humans, even though it's science fiction, sometimes there's still kind of a barrier to what you might want to talk about and what situations you want to put your human characters in. So having a character like Odo or Data or Spock is very important, and I very much agree with the decision. I do like the way that they evolved him over time, and he became his the approach to using him for this purpose became as complex as DS9 was overall as a series. I think
I do like that in that they use him in the same way that they would Spock or Data, as just kind of that character and that motif and kind of that trope that Star Trek had created, and yet they expand it. They don't just let it be exactly the same as we've seen with Spock or the same way we've seen with Data. They really mold Odo into somebody who fits in this Deep Space Nine world, instead of just kind of cramming a trope into Deep Space Nine. And I think that that's, you know, what really works about Odo as a character is that, like everyone on Deep Space Nine, we end up with a very nice arc for him by the time we end the series. And we feel like, in some ways, his journey is complete by the time we get to the end of the series. You know, we know his life still goes on, but we feel fulfilled to have been part of his journey.
Yeah, I can agree with that. I don't know if I feel that it's complete, but yeah, I can see that. And like you say, he fits in well into this situation. I think that we also got a very good arc with Data in The Next Generation. I think we got a very good arc with Spock. Not really on the original series on television, but if you take that along with the movies and where we get to by the end, we got good journeys with all of them that addressed this need to explore what it means to be human in ways that fit each story. So they did well in all those cases. Let me just take you back for a minute, because you mentioned that Odo is a blank slate. And in this case, he really was a blank slate. If we look at the origins of Odo, I think that we learn about why so much of his experience on the show is ultimately a search for identity and acceptance, because you know, he was found in the Denarius Belt in his liquid state, and it wasn't until 19 years later that he was taken to the Bajoran Science Institute, you know, to be studied. And that's when they kind of realized that he was sentient, and he started to actually emerge into our world and have to form his own self-identity. So he really was a blank slate in the beginning.
Well, and I think what makes it so interesting too is just the way they even explain Odo's name in the show. You know, Odo is Cardassian for nothing. And the idea of having what you're called really be something so demeaning, and growing up with that, you know, you are nothing. And so as Odo comes into the world and, you know, realizes himself what he is and what he can be and trying to find out who he is, you know, when your identity is your name at that point means nothing. The psychological ramifications for that as a character, we really see that play out in the series, because poor Odo the whole time is wanting to be accepted and understood by others, and yet he doesn't even understand himself. And so it makes his journey very right. difficult. And in the same way that I think a lot of us feel that our journeys are very difficult, because as much as we want other people to understand us, a lot of times we don't even understand ourselves. And I mean, I know me personally, I run into that all the time. I don't understand my own motivations or, you know, who I am or why I'm doing something. And so I think that this is a really powerful character arc, and it speaks directly to who we are. And I think that's one of the reasons why I really do gravitate toward Odo as a character in this show, especially as I watch the series more and more.
He looks for a lot of acceptance once Starfleet comes around, I believe. I mean, he's very defensive. He's actually a rather angry character in the beginning. At least he flies off the handle very easily. He's very grumpy. Now, the writer's Bible described him as a curmudgeon, and they certainly played him that way through the first few seasons. And I mean, I would say they played him that way through the entire series, although he softens up a bit as time goes on. The bit in The Search where Starfleet has replaced him in terms of his duties as chief of security, where Starfleet matters are concerned on the station, he's so upset about that. And then they, you know, Kira gets him on the Defiant. You know, she makes up this whole little thing about the Bajoran government wanting him to go as an observer. And he just flies off the handle at everyone on the Defiant. He's so angry. And I think that is, for me, it was less about being upset that a Starfleet officer had come in to take over part of the security duties, and more about this feeling that he was, I don't know if I would say being betrayed, but he wasn't getting the trust and acceptance from Sisko and from Starfleet and even from Kira that he felt he deserved at that point.
Well, and two, for Odo at this point, his job is his identity. He's wrapped right. up in this idea that this is who he is, this person who searches for justice. I even thought of him as kind of, you know, on Deep Space Nine, the Lone Ranger of justice, who is going to make sure, no matter who's in charge, that true justice happens. Because laws change, he says. You know, governments change, but justice doesn't. It should be the same. You know, it's a universal thing, is the way Odo looks at it. And right. so when Starfleet begins to take these things away from him, they're taking away who he is. You know, and when anybody kind of attacks us like that personally, or we take it as personally, we lash out. And I mean, again, I know that I do this all the time when somebody kind of criticizes something that I think I do well or tries to take that away from me. It's a part of who I am. And so I react kind of badly to that. And Odo does that here. And I think, again, that that's a really great look at how to write a character, by getting into the psychological makeup of that character so deeply, Really drawing from how life really works. And, you know, this way, again, I think it's one of the strengths of Deep Space Nine is that we are not an all-human crew or all-Starfleet crew. This gives us a chance to have conflict without necessarily betraying any of the things that Roddenberry had set up.
Well, they did see him as a John Wayne type character when they were developing the character. And that setting him up to be kind of like the sheriff on the station, I think, like you said, his identity is his job at that point. And you think about yourself perhaps at times and other people who kind of lose themselves in their work. Actually, this just popped into my head. You know, many listeners know I'm a big college football fan. I'm originally from Alabama, and our very famous coach, Bear Bryant, he was often asked, when will you stop coaching, as he was getting older. And he said that he would never stop coaching because he feared that if he ever stopped, then he would be dead within a month, because that was his identity. You know, that's who he was. And sure enough, he retired and he was dead within a month. And with Odo here, as he was searching for identity early on, you know, after he had been studied at the Bajoran Institute of Science by Dr. Maura Paul, who we see later on, who comes on the station, he, you know, ends up on Terek Nor. He's with the Cardassians. He's basically raised in a Cardassian culture because he was a blank slate prior to that. And I think a turning point for him was this job identity, where Dukat had him investigate the murder. And then he had him later investigate an assassination attempt. And then they made him the constable of the station, essentially. And this kind of pursuit of justice gave him his identity, and it gave him his purpose in being there. And then from that purpose, he has to take the next step of figuring out how to interact with the humanoids, which we would come to know as solids. And, you know, what is his role? How does he fit in to what's going on the station? And it actually led to what I find very interesting about Odo, which is the sort of ethical quandary, this initial view of everything being black and white, and then he slowly learns that things actually aren't black and white, and that there's a difference between order and justice, and you can't necessarily condemn someone instantly because it's convenient, which is sort of what early Odo does, as we learn in some of the flashbacks.
Well, and what's so interesting to see is that that comes from who he is as a changeling in his people, but he doesn't know that. And so his desire for right. order and justice, and specifically just order, comes from his people, the changelings, the founders. And he has no idea of this, but it's very strong in him. And I think that's why he takes so well to the job that Dukat gives him, and it becomes his identity, because as a changeling, he has a desire for there to be absolute order. And we will keep that order any way necessary. You know, Odo, in a sense, gets raised here with this idea that there is justice as well. So that is weighed with the order more for him than most changelings. And so it kind of goes into that conversation about nature and nurture, and how, you know, we raise our children and what they'll believe and how they'll act and all those kind of things. And we see that with Odo, that he's different from his people, and he always is different from his people because of the way that he was raised. You know, first with Dr. Maura and the way they were able to patch up their relationship, and Odo can kind of see the love that Maura had for him as a person, especially once he learned he was a person. And then, too, I think from what he learns from people like watching everyone in Starfleet, the Bajorans, even the Cardassians, and Quark, they all kind of have an effect on nurturing him and making him a more rounded person than somebody who's just worried about order and justice, which relationship adds all the shades of gray.
Yeah. And don't you see that in the fourth season when Worf comes onto the station? And I think I may have mentioned this last week or the week before in Hippocratic Oath, there's that kind of conflict between Worf and Odo about the investigation that's underway on the station. And, you know, Worf feels that Odo's being very lax and he's letting people get away with things on the station, whereas actually Odo had a plan. Odo was letting various things play out. He understood, you know, you can't just charge in and cut something off. And then Worf ends up messing up the investigation. It was an interesting juxtaposition between these two characters, because in this situation, Worf was almost like an early Odo, where everything was very straightforward. You know, it's security and you go in and you see this and you just nip it in the bud now. But by that time, Odo had learned to let more things play out, you know, to dig deeper and to analyze the situation a bit more. We learn in some of the flashbacks that when Odo was working for Dukat on Terak Nor, you know, he had some situations where he allowed innocent people to be executed without really giving them a due process, because it was the quickest way to maintain order. It was the quickest path to justice as he saw it. And you talk about nature versus nurture, and I mentioned that he was raised essentially in a Cardassian culture. And I think that's a very Cardassian approach to take. And so it seemed perfectly normal for him. And because of that strong instinct towards order that he has as a changeling, even though he doesn't know where it comes from at that point, he kind of maybe mixes up or simplifies order and justice in the beginning. And it's through all the interactions that you described there that he comes to understand more of how the world really works and how you have to adapt to your environment in that situation.
Which is generally, too, one of the things that you can learn from the Federation, is that kind of infinite diversity and infinite combinations, and learning to work together as a group in a way that benefits all the people, not just a few of the people. And it is interesting, too, when you look at that idea of Worf kind of being like Odo from the very, you know, first few seasons, because, you know, Worf comes from Starfleet, where you do just nip things in the bud very quickly. But Odo has come to realize kind of this ambiguity about, you know, living in this kind of society. But also, he's a good investigator. And he's realized, too, that, you know, you don't just want to get the guys that are the low-level guys. You want to get the, you know, the people that are higher up on the food chain. And, you know, you can let those other guys get away with some things as long as you can get them, too, later on. But the important thing is to get somebody higher up so things actually get stopped.
Right, exactly. And he's a good investigator, not for what might seem like the obvious reason that he's a changeling and he can turn into a salt shaker or whatever he needs to turn into to get the evidence, but he does learn to look at the bigger picture. And that's, I think that sums up his approach to security on the station. Whereas Worf's role as chief of security on the Enterprise was, he was maintaining security in an environment that was regulated by very strict regulations and parameters, right? It's pretty clear what's supposed to go on the ship, and any deviation from that is out of the norm. It's a different approach that you have to take to maintaining order and security in that situation. And on the station, Odo learned that he had to look at the big picture. And like you said, you let some people slide. It's just like in real life, you know, investigators, they'll make deals with the little guys so they can get the big guys. It's not always about punishing every single person who is involved. It's about solving the larger problem. And this is even, you know, halfway through the series, I think we've seen that much growth in Odo. And it is an influence from the people he interacts with, although not just Federation. You know, you mentioned that's something you can learn from the Federation. I'm not sure I totally agree with that, because the Federation, in principle, I think values diversity, but it doesn't always value diversity in practice. You know, if you watch some of the things that go on, and you have a lot of Starfleet personnel who are very racist against, you know, Cardassians or Romulans or Klingons, and you know, we see that over and over again. But we see the personnel in the ships, they tend to work very well together. They've all been to the academy. You know, they've all bought into the program, to borrow a phrase. I think that the interactions with Quark and Garak and all these other, and the Cardassians, I mean, themselves, for Odo, helped to round out his view of things.
Yeah, I think you have a good point there. That's something that I hadn't thought of, but you're right. You know, Starfleet does, the Federation does tend to have kind of a homogenized way of dealing with things and situations. And, you know, you join the Federation because you want to buy into Federation ideals. And as much as you come together and you work together and you find a way to coexist in that way, you've joined the Federation because you believe in what they believe. And so it does make for a very different world before Bajor and before Deep Space Nine itself is fully a Federation starbase and all of those things. And that's a big difference.
Yeah. It is, and it was nice to see that view, because just by the nature of the method of storytelling on previous series, we were spending all of our time with Starfleet personnel, you know, on a starship. We were getting just one angle of what was going on, and this gave us a totally different one. And so going all the way back to the original concept of Odo and how they introduced him to the show and the purpose of him as the outsider was very important to fleshing out this other angle that we were being shown of what life is really like in the galaxy and even outside of the Federation. Let's go to Quark for a minute, because first of all, I love the whole relationship between Odo and Quark. I think we talked about it when we talked about just favorite characters a little bit. That from the very beginning, you know, they had this love-hate relationship and this begrudging respect. And I feel like that Odo learned a lot from Quark that made him a better security officer, made him a better investigator. But it were some things that were kind of hard for him to accept in the beginning. But he saw value in his interactions with Quark. What do you think about that?
I think that you're right. As you watch through the series, you see the relationship between those two kind of grow and mature. And I think that in some ways, Odo always had a respect for Quark. It might be begrudging, but he respects that, just this kind of tenacity. Quark has this mentality that nothing really gets him down. He just kind of bounces back no matter who's in charge, what's going on. You know, he's the character that is going to find a way to make things work. And it's because, you know, obviously he's driven by profit, but, you know, Quark is not really necessarily always the best Ferengi, because he's not just driven by profit. There seems to be something else that drives Quark. And I think for Quark, he would hate to admit it, but it's about his relationships he has with other people and that he's met at his bar. And I think that's one of the things too that Odo learns from Quark, this idea of friendship. Watching Quark, you know, be friends with somebody like Janzia, or befriend others on the station. All of these kind of things, the way he interacts with people, the way he can, you know, Quark has this ability to get people to open up to him. I think Odo kind of starts to learn that throughout the series from watching Quark. So there are a lot of things that, as Odo observes Quark, he's kind of, I think, able to internalize and use, but in his own way. And in a lot of ways, it makes Odo more personable. I mean, would Odo of, you know, the first season, that Odo would never have gone to the holodeck and gone to Vic Fontaine for advice, you know?
Right.
But the Odo of the sixth season has learned so much and been through so much and seen the importance of talking things out and coming to understand things in a deeper, more personable way, and even doing that with somebody like a hologram can have a benefit. And I think he learned that from Quark. It's okay to have somebody to talk things through with.
Yeah, that's something that he learned on a personal level, no doubt. And, you know, Quark and Odo, they have a lot of similarities compared to the rest of the crew, because they were both there prior to Starfleet coming in. They are both outsiders. They both have had to learn to adapt to that environment. And the fact that they can play off of each other the way they do makes a lot of sense. And I also think that Odo learned, you know, Quark is someone who, he's really a good person at heart, I think. You said he's not really a good Ferengi. The Ferengi, you know, they were presented as, well, their introduction in The Last Outpost was ridiculous, but
you didn't like the laser whips and the fur?
I like the fur. I'm not sure about the laser whips or the hissing. I like the hand gestures, though. They were really nice. But, you know, the Ferengi were, they were presented as a very two-dimensional race driven by greed, driven by the pursuit of material possessions. But then Quark came along and really transformed the Ferengi and turned them into something deeper, at least him on a personal level. And I think Odo saw that even though Quark was involved in some nefarious activities a lot of the time, there were motivations behind it. I think that Odo learned to see different levels of threat, perhaps, you know, from activity going on in the station by interacting with Quark. And he also learned that Quark, talking about Odo seeing the bigger picture, he learned that Quark can actually help him to achieve his ultimate goals, because he really doesn't need to worry about the little guy like Quark. You know, Quark's not going to hurt anybody except maybe the time when he got into weapons dealing.
Right, exactly.
But apart from that, you know, he's pretty harmless, and he actually kind of becomes an ally to help Odo reach his ends from a security perspective.
You know, I think about in the sixth season when, you know, Odo kind of betrays everyone, and Quark is shocked, yeah, you know, because yeah, he's known Odo for such a long time and he's never seen him act like that. And so you can tell from that just the relationship that these two have, and that it is really close, even though it's obviously definitely an odd couple type of relationship.
Now, Odo had relationships with everyone on the station on differing levels, and some of them are more interesting than others. We don't really have time to go into all of them here. We'll do some special shows about them. But the one I did want to talk about here, apart from Quark, is Kira, because Odo's love for Kira is, for me, an unexpected development in the story, but I think a very important one, both for taking a deeper look at the internal struggles that Odo had, as well as the ultimate end game for Odo. And it was also somewhat the root, I think, of another thing I want to talk about, which is being torn between two worlds. But we'll kind of ease into that one. So starting with Kira, I mean, what was your first thought when we came to understand that Odo had these feelings towards Kira?
You know, I really honestly, I don't think was surprised at all when it happened. There's kind of, I think, hints throughout the beginning of the series, and very, you know, quickly you kind of get this feeling that Odo has more of an affinity for Kira than he has for anyone else, and that it's obviously driven by some kind of romantic feelings. And I did think for a long time, I didn't know if they would ever actually go there with those characters. I think it was really interesting to watch that Odo and Kira do not get together on the show until Odo is actually somewhere emotionally ready to handle that kind of relationship. You know, if they had gotten together earlier, like Odo had wanted, I don't think that it would have lasted very long because Odo still was so unsure of himself. But by the time that they finally do get together, you know, they've been through some really hard times as friends. Odo has been kind of through the ringer with his people at the beginning of season 6 there. And when they finally get together, it feels like the culmination of everything that Odo has been learning about what it means to be himself. And he is much more comfortable in being himself because I think he finally knows who he is and who he wants to be. And I think that's finally why Kira is attracted back to Odo, because beforehand, you know, it's hard to be attracted to somebody who has kind of identity issues. It's very difficult to be with somebody like that.
Especially for someone like Kira, who I think doesn't really have identity issues. You know, she's very steadfast in her beliefs. I think she knows who she is. She knows what she stands for. It's very hard to steer her off that path.
Well, and you can tell, too, the people that Kira was attracted to were those same type of people. Somebody who was very confident in who they were, usually also had a calmer personality to kind of balance out her hot-headedness. Odo actually becomes that type of character, somebody very confident in who he is, somebody much more at ease with himself. But also, Odo, by that time period, is a very calm, kind of centered person. And I think that's very attractive to Kira.
What do you think Odo saw in Kira that caused him to latch on to her? You know, we talk about how he's searching for his identity and he's searching for acceptance, but you know, he's struggling with a lot of things. So what do you think he saw in Kira that made him single her out?
Well, one, I think, is he sees her fire and he finds that very attractive, because for Kira, that kind of comes from that deep place of knowing who she is. And in the same way, though, I think Kira, especially at the beginning of the series and onward, she has to deal with identity issues as well, because she's been a terrorist her whole life. That's not who she is anymore.
Okay, that's a good point. I mean, I said that she didn't suffer from identity issues. I think her beliefs were steadfast all the way through, but yeah, I know what you mean. She had to come to terms with a transition from being a terrorist or a freedom fighter, from whatever perspective you're looking at it, to having to play by the rules a little bit more and having to deal with the provisional government and deal with Starfleet. And, you know, she couldn't just take matters into her own hands so much anymore, even though she still did it on a number of occasions, but she got reprimanded for it. And yeah, okay, I can see that.
And I think that's one of the things that, you know, we tend to be attracted to people who are on our same level. And Odo works his way to being at the same level that Kira is, kind of emotionally and in his character and just this stability with his emotions and all of those things. I think that's in the end why, again, Kira can be attracted back to Odo when they finally get together and see him in a new light, because he is much more on her level in all of those ways that are very important to have a very successful relationship. I love their interplay, especially once they get together. And there's that scene at the beginning of season 7 where she's doing the blockade And Odo is just lovingly at her side, you know, and he's giving her the story of with his favorite detective that reminds him of her and has the qualities that he sees in her. And just the way that he's so thoughtful towards her, and the way that she reciprocates that back to him. It's a beautiful relationship, really.
His love for Kira brought up two big points for me as the series went on. And one of them had actually to do with his view of ethics and kind of how he makes decisions and what he puts ahead of other things. And the case was in Children of Time, which I hated when it first came out. I used to think it was the worst episode of Deep Space Nine because I didn't feel like it felt like DS9 to me. But now that I'm older, I rewatched it a while back quite a few times, and we did it on the Ready Room, and it's now one of my favorite episodes because of the relationship between Kira and Odo. But, you know, ultimately, he's willing to sacrifice everyone to save the possibility that he and Kira might be together. His duplicate from the planet and himself who came back, they merged and he passed a message through and he sabotaged the plan. It was kind of a shocking turn of events, actually. And of course, it angered Kira greatly when she found out what he had done. But to think that he would go to such extremes just out of his love for her and just the mere possibility that they would be together. He had so many regrets, you know, that he had to live, you know, in that story, Kira dies in the crash. And so he had to live out his whole life with not only her being dead, but the fact that he never let her know how he felt about her.
And I think this is one of the reasons, too, why it takes them so long afterwards to get together, because as Kira, how in the world could you ever live up to that? You would never, at least you would never feel like you could live up to that kind of, I don't want to say obsession, but I'm not sure what other word to use. Maybe somebody can write us in or tweet me and let me know. I guess in some ways I almost feel like, you know, that kind of idea of putting somebody up on a pedestal, you know, or having kind of an idol that you have that you almost worship. That's the feeling I almost get of that Odo from that future on that planet towards Kira. And I don't think our Odo is there. And so that's what makes me comfortable with it afterwards, because it's not our Odo. It's a
right.
kind of a warped future Odo. But I can see how he could get there after, you know, so many hundreds of years living without her and thinking really about nothing but her.
Right. Yeah. Our Odo, I wouldn't say is obsessed with her, but that other Odo definitely became obsessed with trying to find a way to bring her back once the opportunity arose, and actually went through with the plan, in fact. The other one was the fact that during the war, during the Cardassian/Dominion occupation of DS9, when Odo is locked up in his quarters with the female changeling and Kira is leading a revolt to try to prevent the tide from turning against the Federation. And of course they are found out and they are going to be executed. And you mentioned this earlier that, you know, Odo kind of disappeared during that very critical time. And he was in there, he had linked with the female changeling and it kind of lost himself. And I think about being torn between two worlds, and in the situation, he almost allowed all the people he cares about and the woman that he loves to be executed because he had become lost in this other world that he was born of, but isn't really a part of, with the changelings. But it is this relationship for Kira and this love for Kira that snaps him out of it at the end when the female changeling reveals to him that she's planning to execute Kira. And that's when he kind of snaps out of it and realizes that, you know, maybe he's, I don't know what I want to say here, on the wrong side. He's kind of out of touch with reality at that point. But it's Kira who brings him out of that.
I was thinking about it in the way of, you know, he links with the female changeling quite a few times in that episode. So basically they're doing it. He becomes in some ways kind of addicted to that. He's kind of drunk the Kool-Aid at that point to you know. And the only thing to snap it out of it, like you said, is the idea of that Kira might die. But at the same time, it just kind of reminded me as well of what happens to somebody when they come out of being drunk and they don't remember a lot of what happened. Or they do remember a lot of what happened and they realize how much they regret it. Odo is just kind of drunk on this being part of his people in a way that he hasn't before, and kind of really getting to understand who they are and what they're about and what they're like, and even what his potential as a changeling is.
Yeah, I think that's what it is, because, you know, from the beginning he was longing to find out where he was from, and then when he discovered his people, he's longing to be back with his people. And finally here he had that opportunity to learn more about them. And he, like you said, kind of got drunk on that and got lost in that and just tuned out everything else that was going on around him, which was basically the destruction of not only the world he lived in the Federation areas, but at the same time, I mean, the destruction of his own people was underway as well.
And honestly, I'm not going to lie, if it's a choice between the female changeling and Kira, I'm going to choose Kira every time. Because she's hot. That female changeling is not. And I mean, that woman can turn herself into anything, but she chose that form. I don't get it. I mean, wouldn't you look more like Seven of Nine all the time if you could? You know, if you have that choice? I just don't get it.
Well, she had to associate with Odo, so
I guess that's true.
And she had to remind us as the viewers that she was a changeling.
Right. That's very true.
Because when they go to the Great Link, and when you see many, many more changelings coming up out of the lake, they all have that kind of form that Odo has taken, which is you wouldn't think would be the case, since they are all supposed to be a whole lot better at it than he is. But anyway, it was Kira who snapped him out of this. So let's just take this torn between two worlds idea a little bit further here. And I think what happened to Odo is that he had this original desire to be back with his people and to learn more about where he came from. But he also had this desire to be with Kira, and he had adapted to being part of the crew of DS9. And, you know, at this point he had gone to Earth. He had helped investigate the possible changeling infiltration of Starfleet Command. He had done so many things to help the Federation at that point. He doesn't really know which side he's on anymore. And I think that's something that a lot of us can identify with. I mean, someone like me who, you know, I grew up in Alabama. I'm American, but I've lived most of my adult life in Japan. I'm really torn between two cultures myself. You know, I'm never quite sure who I identify with anymore on many different levels, because there are the things that you learned through nurture growing up. There are the things that you've learned as an adult as you've come to understand the world more. And then there's just the day-to-day activities that you do, you know, that are very different from place to place. And this whole situation that played out with Odo, I thought was an effective way of illustrating how you become torn and how you kind of try to figure out where you belong, which direction you should go in.
Yeah, I can definitely see what you're saying, because as you were talking, I was thinking it for me in a very spiritual sense of being torn for me between two worlds, of the side of me that I still believe is, I guess, sinful, you know, and I have to struggle with that between two worlds for me, and that spiritual idea. So I can completely understand what you're talking about, and it fits very well in there with this. And it is very difficult being pulled in two different directions that are diametrically opposed to one another, and it can become very tiring and frustrating to have that be a part of you, and especially when they're in such odds the way that Odo has. You know, his people go to war with the people that Odo has become the closest to and cares the most about in this world, or excuse me, in this universe. And yeah, I can't imagine a worse place to be put in, you know, a worse situation to be put in. And how he deals with this, I think, is very interesting, in the same way that Garrick has to deal with this when he's put in the same position of being torn between choosing Cardassia, as he hopes it will be, away from the Dominion, and so choosing to help the Federation, and that struggle that, you know, Garrick goes through. So we actually watched this happen through a few different characters. And I mean, this is what happened to Sisko at the beginning. The prophets say to him, "You live here. You know, you may have moved beyond this in linear time, but you actually live here. This is where your thoughts reside. This is where you are. You haven't moved forward." And in that way, Sisko was torn between two worlds of, you know, kind of living in a daze by not moving forward and letting go. And I think we all go through that situation.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, I think we all go through that. I mean, I've had that experience not so long ago myself. Yeah, where you get in that daze and you kind of can't let go of something. And then, yeah, it's hard to move forward. But, you know, you find some way to break out of it. So Odo's relationship with his people, with the Founders, also reminds me of some, I don't know, family situations where there's sort of like a mutual destructive nature to life sometimes. And it kind of happened here with Odo and his people, where they wanted to punish him in a way by forcing him to be solid all the time, while at the same time, when they brought him into the Great Link, he actually infected them with the morphogenic virus that Section 31 had given him. And that set into motion a lot of different things. And in the case of the virus, took us all the way to the end of the series, where Odo's growth as a character, I think, reaches its climax. And also, he essentially saves everyone. He saves his own people, and he saves the Federation. And of course, he saves Kira in turn by doing that. When, even though Bashir, as we talked about last week, found the cure to the virus, it was actually Odo who really made it possible to end the war, who basically disregards everyone and links with the female changeling and cures her, because if she dies, she cannot call off the attack. The war is going to continue, or at least be wrapped up possibly soon, but to a bitter end with great destruction. And so he really saves everyone in the end, which then leads to the end of his journey as we see it on the series, which was kind of bittersweet, you know, because he got what he wanted ultimately in the end, which was to go back to his people. But he also had to give up Kira in the process.
Yeah. His journey actually reminds me of Sisko's. Both brought to a place that they don't really know. They do a lot of growing, And then in the end, in some ways, they each play a savior role. Odo is in the right place at the right time to be a savior to the Alpha Quadrant and the Gamma Quadrant, and to keep further destruction from happening. And then, you know, Sisko, of course, has the much more spiritual journey in the end of being able to save everyone on not just a physical level, but on a spiritual level by finally defeating the Paw Wraiths. And I think it's very interesting that they both have a very similar arc in that sense of both being able to save the galaxy as we know it.
And who we do see in the final pull-away scene of the series, it is Jake Sisko and Kira standing at the window.
Right. And both of them have lost the person that is the closest to them, at least right. As far as they know. They have no idea when or if they will come back. And I think that's a beautiful sentiment and statement about how Deep Space Nine used their characters and the motifs within them and played them off well against each other. And, you know, I honestly had not even thought until you were talking the fact that, you know, Odo and Sisko really have very similar character arcs and growths, especially by the end.
Especially by the end.
So I think that makes the end even more poignant now when I'm going to rewatch it.
Yeah, it does. So what are your final thoughts on Odo's arc from start to finish? Anything that we haven't talked about that stands out to you?
Well, I think it just, Odo is one of those characters that we can really learn a lot from as we watch through the series. And I would just suggest for any listeners, you know, pay special attention to Odo throughout the series in your next rewatch. And just look for those cues to see him kind of morph and change and grow. And no, I don't mean as a changeling, but I just mean as a character from the inside out. And
right, and you don't mean the makeup.
Exactly,
either, right?
It's changed that changes quite a bit as well.
In the first couple of seasons.
The same way Worf's makeup changes almost every season. You know, he gets this opportunity, like we said in the beginning, to be kind of a blank slate and to have his life written all over, in the same way Benny Russell likes to write on the walls. Odo's life begins to get filled with all of these lessons that he's learning from those around him. And I think if I can think of one of the most important lessons that Odo learns, it's that segregating yourself and being alone is not the way to go in this life. It is about family and
That's
friendship and being connected with other people. And that, you know, when we talked about, that's what saves Odo from going down a really dark road by letting go of all that. And over again, it's his relationships with the people that he's met and with Kira that kind of constantly bring him back to understanding what it means to be a humanoid and not a changeling. And that gives him a great, I think, respect for us in the end as humanoids. And he gives us a great respect, I think, for ourselves as we watch him throughout the series.
Yeah, I think Odo is a character who we really can watch and find out more about how we can find ourselves in the world. And the way he evolves, I know maybe the first time through DS9 for me anyway, I didn't kind of pick up on the cues quite as much. I wasn't paying as much attention to Odo in particular, but I would encourage people to watch for that and watch this relationship between Odo and Kira. It's kind of an odd pairing when you think about relationships in Star Trek. You know, I think the Odo-Kira one is one that people may find to be a bit odd, that you have this Bajoran woman and this shapeshifter. But it's really a beautiful journey that they go on. And I think in the end, it really changes them both. And helps them really settle into themselves by the end of the series. So it's one thing that I really enjoy about Odo as well. But I think he had almost as good of an arc as Sisko or Kira did, as we've talked about before. Like so many of the characters, you know, their arcs are very different from one another. Some of them are more obvious than others. But if you watch for those things from start to finish, you can see some really excellent messages and excellent development there. Well, Matthew, it has been great talking about Odo today. We actually talked about Odo for a lot longer than I thought we might. So we should probably let people go, let them get back over to their poker game over there with Morn. And before we do that, let's tell everyone where to contact us if they want to share their thoughts on Odo. You can go to trek.fm/contact. There's a form there. You can fill that out, send it to the Orb, and that'll come to Matthew and myself. Also on the site now, we recently launched some new discussion forums, and we have had people joining, and conversation is growing. And if you want to go over there, you can go to a special section devoted just to the Orb. And there's, of course, another one devoted to General DS9. And join in the conversation. Talk to us about the things we talk about on the show. You know, let us know what you want to hear us talk about on here as well. That's at trek.fm/forums. It's very easy to sign up. You can just log in using your Twitter ID, your Facebook ID, your Google Plus ID, an Open ID, or you can create a dedicated account that's just for our forums. It's up to you, but come join us over there. Find us on Facebook, facebook.com/trekfm. And of course on Twitter under username TrekFM. Matthew, why do people want to look you up personally?
Well, I am on Twitter at MattRushing02, talking Star Trek and all sorts of different things. Definitely give me a follow. Let me know you're following me with an at reply. We'll talk about Star Trek, Deep Space Nine, Enterprise, any of the series, movies, books, toys, games, whatever, you name it. Let me know and we'll talk about it.
Great. If you want to find me, my username is C. Brian Jones. That's Brian with a Y. And you can find me there on Twitter and pretty much everywhere else in social media under that same name. So thanks everyone for tuning in, and join us again next time when we once again gaze into the Orb.